Welcome to Better Sex, where you get the information and inspiration to create and enjoy your best possible sex life. Join your host, sex therapist Jessa Zimmerman, as she brings you expert guests, helpful tips, knowledge, and strategies to improve your intimate relationships. And now, your host, Jessa Zimmerman.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Better Sex Podcast. This is Jessa, and we are here for a new day, a new subject, a new guest, and I'm just delighted you've tuned in. Today, I'm talking to Kelvin Pace, and he is a therapist in Alaska who reached out to me about being on the show specifically to talk about male survivors of sexual assault, and really specifically, men who have been assaulted by women, because what's been added to the parameters of evaluating assault is men who have been made to penetrate someone else, male or female, actually. So not who've been penetrated by someone else, but they've been made to penetrate. Actually, I keep hearing about this. I haven't seen Bridgerton yet, but I'm hearing that this is what happened on Bridgerton. So everybody's been aware of this, that I guess he didn't want a baby and she made this happen. Anyway, that's what we're talking about. And we're talking about specifically the myth that this can't happen, that this isn't rape, that men must want it if they get erect, if they have an orgasm, that somehow they always want sex, that this is an impossibility. And that is not true. That's a debilitating belief that will send men into feeling really bad about themselves and ashamed and or dismissive of what happened and of their own emotional state. So Kelvin's here to talk about the phenomenon and the frequency and really the path to healing for anyone who's been made to penetrate, who's been an assault victim as an adult male. Hope you get a ton out of it. And before we start the show today, it is sponsored by Intimacy with Ease. It's a method to help otherwise happy couples achieve a sex life that is easy and fun for both of them so that you can actually just enjoy your sex life with zero stress. For more information, if you want to watch a brief little training video that's available, all of that, go to intimacywithease.com. So Kelvin, thank you so much for being on the show with me.
No problem. It's a pleasure.
Would you start by just sort of telling us why you do this work? Like, what drew you into working with survivors?
Well, to be honest, it was my first job when I graduated from grad school. I went to go work with Anchorage Community Mental Health Services. And at first, they wanted it with the Child and Family Division, and they wanted me to work with little kids. And I was like, no, that's not in my wheelhouse. And they were like, well, no one's working with transitional age youth. And at the time, the definition for transitional age was from 13 to 24. It's changed a little bit now, I think. I think that age has gotten a little higher. But with working at Community Mental Health Services, about 85 to 90% of the youth were survivors of some kind of sexual assault.
Wow. Okay. So then that's been that's been sort of a driving force for you since then.
Yes.
So what's some of the data on this? I mean, it can't be, well, maybe it can be 75% of the whole population, or is this because the people that are showing up in community mental health, but how much is this happening, you know, especially for male?
So with guys, the data has changed. So CDC came out in 2015 with their National Intimate Partner in Sexual Violence Survey. And what they did was they included a new parameter for looking at male sexual assault, and that was made to penetrate. And it's something that we haven't looked at before in all the other data that was collected. So when they were looking at made to penetrate, they started to find that in any given year, men could be up to 1 in 4 men could be sexually assaulted over a year span. So what we're looking at, that's about the same amount of women that have been sexually assaulted.
Wow.
So when we add that made to penetrate, the numbers come closer to each other as far as men and women.
All right. So maybe you could explain, I think I know what you mean by made to penetrate, but like what were the parameters before and what does this mean?
So before we were just looking at, and some of the things that we thought of as far as sexual assault in men prior to made to penetrate was just men being raped in either prison or them being sexually assaulted by another male. That's where we had that parameter. Now, when we add made to penetrate, which is look exactly what it sounds, men being made to penetrate either other men or other women, that is either by coercion or when men are under the influence of another substance. And interesting enough, 79% of male victims that have been made to penetrate report only female perpetrators.
All right. So somehow women are either coercing or manipulating them or something into, I suppose, an erection, and then they get them to penetrate them, right? I mean, right? Like they're still the person inserting, but it's not by choice.
Yes.
Okay. And that's typically the way a female is going to abuse a man?
Yes. And so I guess a good example of this is several years back, I became an empty nester. And so in private practice, I was like, I have a free time today. So I was ironing some clothes and watching daytime TV. And it was one of those talk shows where sensationalized talk shows.
Right, right.
This talk show was how accurate or if the people are real or if they're actors. But the title of the show was "The Baby Couldn't Be Mine Because I Was Asleep."
Uh-huh.
And so this young man comes out on stage and he's talking about, first the woman comes out on stage and talks about how this young man goes to work and he's always coming home tired and she wasn't able to get sex from him. She leaves, he comes back and he comes on stage and he starts talking about, he walked home from work and he had a 40 ounce of beer while he was sitting on his bed watching TV and he fell asleep and he woke up to his partner on top of him having sex with him.
Uh-huh.
The host then went in to say, man, you have to be kidding. What man would sleep through sex? And so you hear the audience cheering this on, saying, hey, how can this person sleep through sex? And you see, and if this guy was an actor, he should have won an award for it. But he went from this smiling, bright person explaining his story to when he was being chastised about not being awake during sex, shrunk in his chair, and his whole demeanor changed. And the first thing I thought in my head was, that's rape.
Yeah.
That is rape. And she comes back out on stage and she's bragging. He's drunk, but his penis was hard. And so I got mine. That's kind of the message that a lot of men are receiving in society is that we're not a man if we're not accepting sex. And how do we sleep through sex if our penises are hard? And so this is like the definition of made to penetrate.
Yeah. Yeah. It would be so easy to see it for people to think about reverse the genders. And it's like, it's clear, right? You know, and somehow, right, we downplay this if it's happening to men. And it seems to me that this is one of the myths. One of the myths is that men can't be raped or that they must always want it if they're hard or, you know, like what are some of the myths that other myths we have about males and sexual assault?
That only gay men can be sexually assaulted, or erection or ejaculation during sex means you really want it or you can consent it to sex. And those are just some of the small ones that we have around, but they are very impactful to the way how men see themselves in society and why they don't report. Like, I don't supposed to be doing this. This is a myth. It can't possibly happen to me. And we feed on that. And so a lot of men are underreporting sexual assault because of these myths that we've taken on.
Do you know how often is assault happening with, I'm thinking about childhood sexual assault, mm-hmm. You know, and then I'm thinking about, this kind of thing that could happen to you as an adult, just out in the world or in your own relationship or something. What percentage of sexual assault is happening as adults? I don't know if there's statistics for that.
Yeah, actually, there is. So among the male victims of completed or attempted rape, about 71% first experienced that victimization prior to the age of 25. And so a lot of it is happening in their youth, and more of it is happening when they're very young, when you really can't protect yourselves.
Yeah, right. And I know that for childhood sexual assault, it's mostly done by somebody we know, somebody with access, somebody with some, you know, power, potentially with love. And it almost sounds like it's a similar thing as an adult. It's going to be somebody a decent percentage of the time that you're in a relationship with or on a date with or something, and they cross that line.
Exactly. And other avenues of me to penetrate, other definitions, as I was looking a little bit deeper into this, it's being guilted or coerced into sex, which we know is a horrible thing when we do it to women. It's absolutely horrible. But we don't tend to think that men could be manipulated or coerced into sex, because the myth is we want it all the time.
Right.
Or this is a really big, strong guy. How can this little woman force him to penetrate her?
Yeah.
There are stories where men have been forced to penetrate with their visitation to their kids.
Oh, like held over their head? Like you won't get to see your kids if you don't show up and have sex with me or something? Wow. And so I'm thinking about the ramifications of all these myths, the societal perspective on this, you know, and what it must do to a man. Like you said, the guy shrunk in his chair on TV. You know, he went from like thinking he could tell his story and have this be empowering to the whole crowd's kind of cheering this thing on. What does it look like if somebody is internalizing that, has not really come to terms with it or processed it? You know, I'm wondering, like, if your clients come into your office, what are the symptoms or what's happening in their lives at this point when they're still sort of haven't dealt with the fact that they've actually been assaulted?
I think it looks like what society has deemed as toxic masculinity. To explain that is these men absorb that information that we've given, those myths, so much so that they try to push away from it. And when they're pushing away from it, they become hyper-masculine. I can't be assaulted. That didn't happen to me. And I'm going to try to take back all of this control. And that is putting people down. And there's a couple examples I have of this. And there is a great documentary. It's an older documentary that you can find on YouTube. It's called Shatter Boy. Shatter Boy talks about follow these men that have been interviewed when they have been sexually assaulted. And they talk about, as they've gotten older, how that has played out with them as an adult. And so they've become hyper-masculine. They can't tell their feelings. They can't talk about their feelings. And they become, in one particular gentleman, in fact, said, before I got help, before I got treatment, I just slept with woman after woman after woman after woman to take my power back. And I did not have an emotional connection with them. So as we look at how these men are showing up when they're young, and the myths and the things that were taught to young boys is don't talk about your feelings. You can't be vulnerable. Men don't get raped. And we start playing that narrative over and over again, and we absorb it. Then we start to act out on that narrative that we're having.
Yeah.
And so a lot of the work that I do is trying to get men to feel safe in this space. That it's okay to be vulnerable again. It's okay to start talking about telling their story. And once they start doing that, they start to feel a little bit more empowered, and they can start to slowly connect with other people.
Yeah. And I'm just sort of sitting here with thinking of the impact. Like, it must be hard enough to experience childhood sexual abuse and maybe take that on, or I should have been able to protect myself. But at some point we can maybe realize, wait, I was a child, you know, like there was nothing I could do about that. But I can imagine how much harder it is as a grown man to really take in that, yes, I've been assaulted or raped, you know, made to penetrate. Like, this is how huge that must be.
It is difficult to accept, but that's also feeding that narrative too.
Exactly. Right? Exactly. How powerful that myth is, and how binding or constricting that would be, and how hard it must make it to seek help.
Mm-hmm. And they usually don't seek help. And that's the issue, right? Getting more men to come in and say, hey, this happened to me. Don't laugh at me. Don't belittle me. I need help with this.
Yeah. So I want to talk in just a second about how you help people with this, you know, what people can do and what that process looks like. But I'm also thinking, wow, there's showing up to get help in maybe a therapist's office. Mm-hmm. And then I suppose there's maybe telling your story just to friends and loved ones and family and being sort of out with it. But then I'm really wondering, is there anything happening in the legal system to hold women accountable? Does this ever get prosecuted? Is the legal system way behind the therapy realm in terms of accepting that this is an actual assault?
That I haven't ventured into an understanding of yet. It's just just trying to be at that first part of the groundwork.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I work with our local Stand Against Rape and teaching the responders how to engage with male survivors as well when they call in to report.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
To assault. But as far as that part of going down the legal road, yeah.
Yeah. But it makes me wonder if is this ever getting prosecuted or convicted, or, you know, it seems less likely. I mean, it's also hard to get through that system with a female survivor of rape. Yeah. So.
Yeah, that's my thought exactly. You know, it's so hard for women survivors to come up and to take their, and for a lot of people to take them serious when a sexual assault happens. I think it's either the same or if not more than any with a man.
Yeah, I would imagine. Hey, this is Jess. I'm just taking a quick break, and I want to make sure you know about the guide I wrote about how to talk to your partner about sexual concerns. This comes up a lot in my practice. People have struggles, and it takes them so long to bring it up with their partner. They're afraid that conversation is going to go badly. Their partner's going to be upset. The partner's going to be defensive, or they just don't know how to talk about sex and sexual problems. Common problem. So I wrote this guide that really helps you address this. It helps you prepare for the conversation, how to introduce the conversation, and then tips about how to actually get through the conversation so that you can change things with your partner as a team. If you are interested in this guide, you can find it at bettersexpodcast.com/guide. Again, bettersexpodcast.com/guide. Happy to send it to you. All right. So what does this journey to healing look like in your work with somebody? What's sort of the process, and what would somebody maybe expect? I mean, they're probably not all in Anchorage, right? So what would somebody expect when they're going to work with a therapist about this?
That first step is looking for therapy. And so when clients come in to see me and they're looking for therapy, we want to pay homage that this was a huge task. And I really celebrate the fact that they're coming in to look for therapy. But working with transitional age youth, I know a lot of youth were there not of their own free will.
Right.
I sent them. And sometimes with men, they've been kind of suggested or told by loved ones, like, go seek therapy.
Okay.
I really try to normalize it for the men that come see me. And in that sense, I say, hey, you know what? I may not be your cup of tea. I may not be that therapist for you. Try it on, see where we're at, and don't be afraid to take ownership of your own mental health and say, Kelvin, you're not the person for me. And that's okay. And make it easy for them to say that. So then they'll think, I can join your hand and help you find someone that may be the right person for you.
That seems important, because you are empowering them to tune in with themselves and be there for their own reasons and figure out what they are seeking. You know, like, that's a real intervention that you're making there.
Exactly. And when they can trust that, then you start to see people kind of open up a little bit. When they find out that I was in the military, that's another piece that they're like, oh, okay. So we can connect that way. Mm-hmm. That trust is the most important piece, more than any intervention that I can throw. I've been trained in prolonged exposure therapy, EMDR, and also trauma-focused cognitive behavioral therapy. But if I don't get that therapeutic clinical rapport with my clients, that doesn't matter.
Right, right.
Then that journey is to look at emotions, to sit down and help my clients really talk about how they feel. And when dealing with trauma, or just most of us in general, we tend to want to quantify or qualify our thoughts with the statement, I feel.
Right. Right. I'm constantly talking to my clients about that. The thinking is different than feeling. Let's get really specific here.
Yeah. And then also moving into thinking that, to understand that feelings are a normal biological function. And once they can move into there, then they stop avoiding their feelings, because I could use the having to go pee is one of my references, right?
Okay.
You know, you feel pressure on your bladder. It tells you, you have to go pee. And I asked him, I was like, well, what happens before you go pee? Well, nothing. I just go pee. I'm like, well, No, something actually happens. You ask questions. Can I go right now? I'm in a Zoom meeting. Is this the appropriate time? Where's the nearest restroom? And they're like, ah, okay. So that does happen. And then after you've gathered that information, you make a decision about the behavior that you want to exhibit. Right? So if you decide to go to the bathroom and wash your hands and come back, that would say that's a neutral or positive behavior. If you stand up and pee in my aloe vera plant that I've been trying to desperately resuscitate, I would say that's a negative behavior.
Right, or just pee in the Zoom meeting, right?
Exactly. So I help them move that over to their emotions. There's a physiological response that's going on inside of us, or there's a thought that triggered an emotion. And a lot of times we try to avoid that emotion because that physiological response or the thoughts are just so intense. But what if we started asking questions about that emotion rather than trying to avoid it? And then that behavior, then we gather that information, we make a decision on our behavior. When I put it in that frame of reference, they're then able to see that emotions are just emotions and not to judge it. Like, we don't ever judge the fact that we have to go pee. And since we don't judge the fact that we don't have to, that we have to go pee, since we don't judge it, we can ask questions of it.
Right, right.
It's not positive or negative. It's just happening. So same with emotions. If it's just happening, we can ask questions about it. We're not going to judge it. Now, our behaviors afterwards, that's what we can say are negative or positive. And so when they're able to sit with that and to able to sit with their emotions and decide what behaviors they want to engage in, then it's still that all empowering step, like, hey, I have some control over what I can do in this. I have control if I'm going to take this out on my partner or if I'm going to go into a sense of hypermasculinity.
How important is it? Like, how much are you working with people, or you think it's important to work with people around how they felt during the assault or at that time in the past versus how they're feeling today?
Very important. I like to call it time traveling. When we start to time travel, our bodies can only live in the reality that our minds create. And so when we are constantly in our survival mind looking for people to hurt us, our bodies are going to respond that way. We're going to get, you know, the heart rate and everything increases. The adrenaline starts going and we start to act out on that. And when I get them to be present with their emotions at this time and trying to connect it to the past, we start thinking about the thoughts that are creating that time traveling place as triggering thoughts. And that triggering thought can be, I'm not safe because my physiological response is creating this. And so I'm not safe. I remember not feeling safe back then. And so I try to get them to come back to the present and be here with that space now. Once they can master some of that time traveling and intervening on those thoughts, and I have two systems of thoughts that I try to talk to them about, or that what if, what if, what if, and I should have, I should have, I should have.
Yeah.
Those thoughts keep us in that time traveling paradox until I am. In getting to that question of, this is who I am. Then I ask them the more difficult questions of, and this is very hard initially, but I ask them, what did you learn about that experience? What did you learn about yourself? And so we, instead of going into that what if question, what did you learn? What are you curious about? That person then as to now. And these men are able to sit back and they're able to explore that question and they are able to come up with statements of resiliency, of empowerment.
Okay. So part of what I hear is that it's really crucial that we can be in the moment now, realize this is not happening to me now. I can be choiceful about who I am now. But I also imagine it can be, seems like it would be important to go back to the story of what happened to recognize what really happened, because it probably filed away as we just had sex or something felt weird. But, you know, like to understand that it was an assault, to understand that they were coerced, to understand that they were made to penetrate, and maybe processing the reality of it must have a role too, right? Telling the story and sort of seeing it for what it is.
Yes, going back into that narrative is very important. So a lot of people come in and they'll give me the police report. Who, what, when, where. And when we go back to that narrative and I take the police report out of it, how did you feel in that moment?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? And then some of the EMDR stuff of what did you believe about yourself, right? What are some of the negative beliefs? Where did you feel it in your body? And how is that showing up for you right now?
Yeah. So that seems like useful time travel. I don't know if I quite put it that way, but like to go to that narrative and feel it and recognize what happened and maybe get a little psycho-ed that,
yeah,
you know, some learning like, yeah, that actually was assault. as you're working on mastering your now.
And in that time travel, though, it's with intention about learning.
Yeah.
Instead of ruminating.
Yeah.
You know, and so that would be the difference.
Right. Right. That makes a lot of sense. Anything else you can think of in terms of the healing journey about this? I don't know if you in particular work in any sort of group. Do you run groups for men to share these stories or how important might that be?
No groups, but I think it is very important to have groups so we can, we don't want to normalize trauma. We don't want to normalize sexual assault, but we want to get to the place that says, hey, this happened. I'm not the only one. And there are other men that have been through the same thing, to have that support and ideas about how to heal from it. A lot of people like to come in and say, well, I just need to get over this. Sometimes there's no getting over it, but there is some healing.
Yeah. All right. So that leads into the last question I've got for you, which is some of the resources for male victims of, you know, who've been raped.
Yeah. Yeah. So malesurvivor.org, I think, is a very great resource. They do have online groups and other things like that where people can tap into. They're slowly building more up where they are even going to move into being able to point out therapists for you or help male survivors find therapists. RAIN is another organization, RAINN, and .org. They work with all sexual survivors, but they have a portion of their website dedicated to men survivors that it's more like of a, I'm going to date myself, like a Yellow Pages.
Yeah. If anyone listening doesn't know what that is, that's, you can Google it, right?
Where they can find different resources, either locally or nationally, where they can get in contact. And there's also a national, they also have the number to the National Sexual Assault Survivor Hotline there. And then the last one that I like is menhealing.org. They are another organization that they, well, probably before COVID, they would have events where they would have weekends for people, for men to come out and to do retreats for healing. And they also have a page for other resources for men survivors. And then, of course, locally, there is your local Stand Against Rape groups. Here, I know up here in Alaska, our STAR group is very vigilant at making sure that male survivors aren't pushed away and aren't stigmatized for reporting.
Okay, so Stand Against Rape is for sort of anyone who's been raped.
Yes.
But room for men in there. Okay. And where can people get in touch with you, find out more about you? Maybe for if there are listeners in Alaska, you know, who want to seek you out, where should they go?
My website is kpacecounseling.net. They can also find me on Facebook at Kpace Counseling LLC. And I have a fledgling Instagram. And we'll see how that goes. I'm learning all the new stuff.
Yeah, exactly. I know what you mean. I know what you mean. Well, thank you so much for being on the show and sharing this information.
Well, thank you very much for having me. Appreciate it.
You've been listening to Better Sex. Please visit our website, bettersexpodcast.com, for show notes and additional episodes.
And that's a wrap for today. I really hope you enjoyed the episode. If you are enjoying the podcast, if some of this material resonates with you and you would like to make a difference and make sure that this keeps coming out in the world once a week, ongoing, there are a couple things you could do to show your appreciation. The first would be to go to iTunes and rate and review the show. That really helps us be found by new listeners when you review the show on iTunes. You can find a link at bettersexpodcast.com/iTunes. The other thing I want to invite you to consider is becoming a Patreon. For a small monthly pledge, you get some benefits. So for $2 a month, you get advance access to every single episode. For $5 a month, you get a chapter of my upcoming new book. And for $10 a month, I host quarterly get to know you and question and answer chats over the web, and you get invited to that. I would love to have your membership in that become part of the Better Sex family. You can find a link at bettersexpodcast.com/Patreon, which is P-A-T-R-E-O-N. Again, thanks for listening. I'm glad you're here. Feel free to comment, ask questions, get in touch. I'd love to hear from listeners. Thanks.